Well, hey, if you don't know me, my name's Josh. I'm on staff with Chi Alpha, and I'll be speaking with you, to you, at you. It depends on what you choose to believe there. And we're in a series called Elements of Life, and tonight we're going to continue in our series. We've spent the last three weeks looking at the element of faith and seeing Abraham's story, and we've learned a lot about faith. And now we're going to transition to the story of Abraham's grandson, Jacob. And we're actually going to be looking at the element of grace, to see God's grace in our lives and the story of Jacob. We're going to spend 2 weeks on the life of Jacob, so I am very excited as we continue in this series tonight. But first, let me tell you what happened to me this weekend. Can I tell you a little story? So yesterday, I'm out in the driveway. We went to church yesterday morning and got home. I thought it was going to be cold. Turns out it wasn't cold, so we got a chance to go outside and play. My three kids are outside. My wife, Katie, up here in the front row, we're outside. And we have a new addition at our house. It's not a child, don't worry. It is a basketball hoop. Yeah. We just got our first basketball hoop. My son Levi got it for Easter from his grandparents. And we took the middle pole out so that it could be more at his height. And so Katie and I were playing a game of horse. Let me tell you this. On a 7.5-foot rim, I have Steph Curry range. It was like from the front porch. It was over the truck. It didn't matter. I like absolutely couldn't miss. I beat my wife pretty badly in horse. Here's the other part of the story. As to a reason why I beat my wife in horse. Not only is it a 7.5-foot rim and I've got range like Steph Curry, but it's also we have three small children. And I don't know if you have met our small children, but our small children all like my wife a lot more than they like me. And so what would happen is I would take a shot, and I would obviously be very focused on the game and the task at hand, and I would bury it, and then I would pass it to my wife and say, shoot from here. She would walk over to it, and all three kids would follow her. Judah, our youngest, he's 16 months, is that true? Somewhere in that range? I have absolutely no idea. He just started walking. And he's got both hands up in the air, trying to grab her as she's taking a shot. It was awesome. It was completely awesome. And so my wife, and then there would be times where I would be taking a shot and she would go to take a shot and she would say, where are the kids? And I would say, I have no idea. I'm in the middle of a game right now. What do you mean, where are the kids? And she'd be like looking around for the kids. She wasn't focused. She wasn't paying attention. And so she lost because I had the right focus. And she was focused on some other things. Know what I mean? You know, that's all well and good. That's a funny story when we lose focus and it's just about a basketball game. All our kids are still okay, and I think they're all still at home. That is okay, but what happens when we lose focus in our spiritual life? What happens when we lose focus on something that matters a little bit more than just a basketball game on a 7.5-foot rim? What happens? And that's what I love about our story tonight as we continue in Jacob's story, as we see Jacob's story. If you turn with me to Genesis chapter 28. A lot has happened since last week. Last week what we had is that, you know, Abraham was taking his son Isaac to the altar, and luckily both of them came down from the mountain. After that, what we see is that Abraham goes on to the end of his age, and as he's preparing to die, he sends his servant out with camels, with gifts, with all these things to go find a wife for his son Isaac. The servant comes back with Rebekah. Isaac and Rebekah then carry on the lineage, and then two other children are born, Esau first, and then Jacob, who we're going to be reading about tonight. What we see is that from birth, that Jacob was quite the young man. That in his mother's womb, he and his brother would wrestle. They would fight each other. And his mother was like, why is this happening to me? What? I have no idea what that's like, but I imagine it's terrible. And the Lord says, it's because the older will serve the younger. And when the twins are born, Esau comes out first, and Jacob has a hold of his heel as he comes out. And it's like, this is going to be trouble. Sometimes you just look at it and you can see it. And so he gets the name Jacob, which means the one who grabs the heel. Or later we'll find out that it could also mean deceiver. And then what we read in the text is that as it talks about Isaac and Rebekah and Jacob and Esau, we see that Isaac loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. And the narrator goes to a point to tell us this, and I think, wow, that must have been a terrible household to grow up in, where you just knew, you could feel, you knew there were favorites. And so what we see is that Jacob and Isaac are at odds from the very beginning, and we see that Jacob lives up to his name. He steals things. He's the deceiver. He takes Esau's birthright. He sells it to him for some stew. Yuck. He's like, give me that stew. And he's like, I have to have it. Give me your birthright. Not my birth. Yeah, come on. Give it up. Okay. And then right before our passage tonight, we see at the end of Jacob's life, he's preparing to give his blessing to his favorite son, Esau. And he tells Esau, go out and kill some wild game for me and bring it back. And Isaac's wife, Rebekah, hears it and she's like, wait a minute. That's going to be for Jacob. And so Jacob goes and dresses himself up in this goat hair, and he puts on his brother's clothes so he smells like his brother, and he goes in and he steals his brother's blessing. As he's trying to focus on making his name known, making himself known, making his own safety, his own security, he steals his brother's blessing. His brother gets back and is furious, as you might imagine, and then it turns out the text tells us that his brother's kind of a big dude. He's kind of a mighty warrior, really good with the bow and arrow. And he's like, that's it. It's come to the end. I'm going to kill my brother. At this point, Jacob's mom's like, yo, Jacob, you got to get out of town, like, now. Leave immediately. So she tells Isaac, we're going to send Jacob to find a wife. And so that's where we pick up our passage tonight. Jacob is leaving town for the first time. He's headed off. He's running from his brother. He's running from his past. And he's headed off to find himself a wife. And so let's read in verse 10. It says, Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. A couple things I want to point out right there. That first of all, there it goes. I'm the one that knows how to do this. So. Just pardon me. Got it? Thank you. Thank you for the one of you that clapped over here. Thanks, Brett. The narrator goes out of his way to tell us that the sun had set. That's not only just to tell us that it's dark, but it's also the narrator trying to communicate something, that darkness, that sunsets, that as the sun is going, the narrator is telling us a little bit into what Jacob's mindset was. This could have been the first time that Jacob would have been alone. He has left his home. He has left his family. He is out and alone, and darkness has come in. Darkness has set, and I can only imagine what was going through Jacob's mind. Like, what was that sound? Was that Esau? Was that my brother? What's going to happen? And then we realize that Jacob has nothing with him. He didn't even pack a pillow. Like, he just pulls a rock out to sleep on. This is all that he has. He's in stark contrast to Abraham's servant who left several chapters ago with camels and gifts. And Jacob's got to go find a wife, and he literally has nothing. He's probably scared. He's focused on his surroundings, and he doesn't know what is going to happen. This could potentially be his last sunset. And then something amazing happens. Let's read on. Verse 12. It says, he had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to the heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. Wow. What a powerful dream. What a powerful vision that Jacob has this night. As he lays there on his rock, the Lord appears to him in his dream, and he sees a staircase with the angels of God ascending and descending. And the Lord is revealing to Jacob that I am active on this earth and in your life. The angels of God are ascending and descending from heaven. This is what is happening. And as the narrator points this out to us, you know, Katie and I, we read to our kids from the Jesus Storybook Bible. It's fantastic. When we've been reading it, and just last week, the week before, we read through the story of the Tower of Babel from Genesis chapter 11. And as I read this passage in the Jacob narrative, I thought, this reminds me a lot of the Tower of Babel. What we see in the Tower of Babel, I think we have the text up here on the screen. In Genesis chapter 11, so the nations are there, and they say, come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly. You don't want those things to be not thorough. They used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we will be scattered over the face of the earth. What we see from this story, what we see as the parallel to Jacob's story is that just like with the Tower of Babel, Jacob had been trying to build his own tower. Jacob had been trying to find his own security. Jacob had been trying to find his own strength. Jacob had been trying to do it his own way, under his own power, by his own might. He tried to steal. He tried to deceive. He tried to lie so that he could get where he wanted to be. And the Lord says to him, you won't be able to build that tower. I have already built it from the other way, coming down to you and then going back up. I thought, what a picture of grace. And then as you read further, you realize that I don't know if the promise that God made to Jacob sounded familiar to you, but it sounded really familiar to me. He said, I'm the Lord, the God of your father, of Abraham and of Isaac, and I'll give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the north, all peoples on earth, and I will bring you wherever you go back to this land. I will not leave you till I've done what I promise. I thought, that sounds a lot like the promise you gave to Abraham. And what we've learned the last 3 weeks is that Abraham was a man of great faith. Jacob is a liar. Jacob is a cheater. Jacob is a deceiver. And the Lord looks at Jacob in his grace and says, I will make that same promise to you. It's not about what you've done, Jacob. It's not about what you think you've done or what you wish you would have done. It's about me. It's about my promise that I am the one. I am the God of grace. And what grace does, it will let you take your focus on your current circumstances or the circumstances of your past. And what grace says is that let your focus be on me, the Lord of heavens, who is active around you. I will give you the correct focus because of my grace. And then we see what Jacob says when he wakes up. In verse 16, it says, when Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. Early the next morning, Jacob took the stone he had placed under his head and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on top of it. He called that place Bethel, though the city used to be called Luz. Bethel means the house of God, or really cool fourth year in Chi Alpha. Got him. Jacob wakes up and he doesn't know what to do. He looks around and he makes this amazing statement. He says, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. I was focused on all the wrong things. I was focused on all the things that didn't matter. I was focused on doing it myself, on making it happen myself, on being the liar, the cheater, the deceiver. I was focused on my past. I was scared, and I didn't even realize the Lord was in this place, and I knew it not. That it turns out it wasn't ever about me. It was always about him. That he was always active in my story, though I didn't even know it. And I can look back and see that he is the God that had been doing these things, but I didn't even, how did I miss it? And then I realized that I so relate to Jacob. Like, yeah, that is my story. As I think about the God of grace that has been with me, the things that he has said to me, and I realize that this is a really hard message for me. To look at Jacob's life and to see the promise that God makes to him is the same promise he made to Abraham, the man of faith. That's the same promise he makes to the liar, the deceiver, the grappler. I realize that is what I need to make my focus. That's what my focus should be, on God's grace. And then I realize that part of the difficulty in understanding God's grace is a little bit of the culture that we live in. A little bit of the world that we live in today, because understanding grace and living by grace is so countercultural, even specifically to the university that we all know and love, that the university would tell you that you have to earn this, you have to do this, you have to write this on your resume, your grade point average, your friend circles, your social status, all these things matter. All these things are the only thing that matter. All these things only matter so that you can get into the right medical school, so you can get into the right graduate school, so you can get the great jobs, so that you can get yourself set up on the right trajectory, and that your past will actually inform the entirety of your future, and that every single thing that you do matters because you have to make that your focus. I realize that that's just exhausting. That's terribly exhausting. That actually what God would say is, actually, it's up to me. Don't focus on those other things. Don't focus on your past. Don't focus on who you used to be or who people have said that you are, but that actually I, in my grace, would come to you right now. And that's actually what he did. That's actually what God did for us. This is not just a story for Jacob. That what we realize now is that the staircase, the ladder, if you will, has been met for us in the cross. That Jesus, the God of grace and his great mercy, came down, ascended, descended so that we may ascend with him. And then what we realize is the scandalous gospel of grace is that the cross is no respecter of persons. The cross doesn't care about pedigrees. The cross doesn't care about past. The cross doesn't care about futures. The cross just loves you. And that as we can all relate to Jacob in the story, as we look at some of the things that have happened to us, some of the things that we have done, God in his grace would say, surely I am in this place, whether you know it or not. That I desire to be with you, that I desire to be active in your life, if you would but have the correct focus. If you would not focus on those things around you, those things that you think define you, and you would focus on me and my grace. And then we see in our story that as our story ends, it ends actually a little disappointing as I read as to Jacob's response. In verse 20, it says, then Jacob made a vow saying, if God will be with me and will watch over me on this journey I am taking and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I return safely to my father's household, then the Lord will be my God, and the stone that I have set up as a pillar will be God's house, and of all that you give me, I will give you a tenth. I hope you felt me emphasize two words there, if and then. That Jacob, after getting this amazing vision, Jacob, after having this moment where he's scared for his life and God appears to him with angels and ascending and descending, gives God an if-then statement. If you do this, then I would. And I can't help but think of the contrast of what God's grace is for us, that God doesn't say that to Jacob. He doesn't say, if you stop cheating, if you didn't lie, if you wouldn't have deceived your brother, if you wouldn't have done X, if you wouldn't have done Y, if you wouldn't think X or think Y. But instead, God says, no, by my grace, I have chosen you, and I desire to choose all of you in this room tonight. I think it's so easy for me in my own heart to think through the ways that I'm not worth it, think through the ways that it's not worth it for me, that maybe this was all a mistake, maybe Jesus didn't mean it, maybe he meant it for everyone else other than me. Or maybe I think maybe if I just work harder or try harder or strive harder, then I could earn God's favor and that's what this would be about. And I realize that I'm making if-then statements just like Jacob did. It was a spiritual discipline to sleep in this morning, that knowing that I was going to preach tonight on grace, like everything in me thought, get up really early and pray so that God would be with you tonight. I didn't sleep in like really late, but like there's this tension between grace and effort, but I feel it in my own heart. Like, okay, I've got a really big, like Katie and I have this really big deadline, or we're hoping to do this or do that. So I need to really double down on prayer this week and really it's just a tension that I face in my own life to make if then statements for God when God doesn't make those for us. He says, I'll take you as you are. I want you in my life right now, and we'll work the rest of the stuff out later. But know that I am here in this place, and that I am active right now, and it's all because of my grace. So I got a couple questions that I want us to ponder tonight. I'm going to go ahead and invite the band up. I'm going to have you all just stand with me as the band is coming up. So we'll go ahead and... As you stand, if you just close your eyes and just focus for a moment with me. Now it sounds spiritual. Thank you. So here's my question. Here's the first one. What has been your focus? What has it been that's been easy for you to focus on instead of God's grace, his scandalous gospel of grace? In what ways have you been tempted to believe that you could earn it, that you could fight for it, that you could make it happen in of yourself? The next question would be this: What has gotten in the way of you accepting that grace? Has it been a lie that you've believed? A lie that someone's told you? You're not worth it. You're not good enough. This isn't for you. Has it been a past experience that you have done or has been done to you? Well, because of that, how would you lay that before the Lord at your Bethel tonight, who by his grace would say that I am in this place? Maybe you're here tonight and you don't know this Jesus, this transforming man who wants to see you transformed. So the question for you tonight is, would you accept that grace tonight? Would you step into a relationship with him through faith and say that I don't know what will happen, but I lay it all out here for you tonight and ask for you to do whatever you would do. The last thing I would say to you is, how can you breathe in grace and breathe out grace, rest in his grace, to push out all the other things that would strive for your attention and for your focus, and instead live in grace? So we're going to respond through song. I invite you to just use this as your altar space tonight. If you want to pray with a friend, pray with a friend. If you want to journal, journal. If you want to sing your heart out into the Lord, sing your heart out tonight. Because we are trophies of his grace. And it's all by his power. So pray with me as we enter into worship. God, we thank you. We thank you for your grace. We thank you for your grace in the story of Jacob, and that can be our story tonight too. We declare that you are good, that you have been the faithful one, that you have been the gracious one, that we see that in our own lives, and we accept your grace tonight, King Jesus. So come and be with your people tonight as we respond to you in prayer and worship. Come, Lord Jesus.